Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Jesper Skibsby, founder of radio monitoring service Warm Music. First of all, if you're an artist that uses Bandcamp, I think you'll like this news. Epic Games has sold the audio distribution platform to music licensing company SongTrader. SongTrader now owns or controls the music platforms Pretzel, Jaxta, 7 Digital, MusicCube, Massive Music, SongZoo, TuneFind, Vinyl.com, and now Bandcamp. SongTrader founder and CEO Paul Wilcher was a guest on my podcast number 106 back in April 2016, and boy, things have really come a long way since then. Epic Games always seemed like an odd fit for Bandcamp, which it just purchased last year. But the gaming platform is in a bit of trouble these days, as it's just laid off 16% of its workforce before also selling Bandcamp. Bandcamp's new owner says it will continue to operate the platform as a marketplace and music community with an artist-first revenue share, while the acquisition will enable it to expand its support to the artist community. SongTrader will now offer all Bandcamp artists the ability to have their music licensed to all forms of media, including content creators, game and app developers, and brands, which is good news. SongTrader also said that it was exploring ways to allow Bandcamp artists to have their music licensed for use in Epic Games and its metaverse ecosystem. All in all, this sounds like a win for artists that use Bandcamp. It's not often that an acquisition of a company goes the right way for its customers, but this one just might. If you have any comments or questions, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. Also, I'm pleased to announce that the fifth edition of my Recording Engineer's Handbook is now available. It's totally updated and includes new sections on the latest cutting-edge recording technology, multiple ways to mic over 70 different instruments, a new chapter on recording immersive audio, new hitmaker engineer interviews, and much more. To get your copy, go to rebrand.ly/recording-handbook. That's rebrand.ly/recording-handbook. You can also find it on Amazon and Apple Books. And remember, you can learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. There was an article in Billboard this past week about all the musicians, studios, and engineers in Nashville being busier than ever. The point was that they weren't working on multiple projects, but ones that go longer than ever. Even in country music, albums now contain way more than traditional 10 or 12 songs. Now we're talking 20, even 30 songs per album. From a marketing perspective, this is pretty self-defeating, actually. Consumers don't feel like they're getting a better deal because they're getting more music. They feel burdened by all the content instead. It's true that the average length of songs have dropped by 20 seconds over the last 5 years, from about 3 minutes and 50 seconds to 3 minutes and 30 seconds, some even coming in around the 2-minute mark. A lot has to do with the fact that our attention spans have grown shorter and shorter when listening to music. It's a fact that 25% of all listeners reach for the skip button within the first 5 seconds. TikTok is built around 7 and 8 second posts, and there's 120,000 songs being uploaded to streaming services every day. For an artist, releasing more songs might feel like buying more tickets to the lottery, but you're also just adding to all the noise and maybe taking a spot away from a deserving artist as well. It used to be that albums on vinyl lasted about 35 to 45 minutes, and no one ever complained. As a matter of fact, it was a nice chunk that allowed you to consume it without spending way too much time. It's time for fewer but better songs. It's time for quality over quantity. My guest today is Jesper Skibsby, the CEO and founder of Warm, the first global radio monitoring service focusing on serving the artist and indie segment of the music industry. Warm track and identify music played on radio globally and in real time. The vision behind Warm is to make detailed music data available to everybody, especially the long-tail segment of artists, producers, managers, and record labels. Jesper has established companies like Fandango Music Management, We Make Noise, and Cassiopeia Collective. He's been a board member of the Association for Independent Record Labels in Denmark, and has represented Music DNA as the head of Scandinavia. During the interview, we spoke about why radio metrics are overlooked by indie artists, yet so important, why radio is still the biggest driver of music consumption worldwide, how the internet has actually boosted radio music listening, and much more. I spoke with Jesper via Zoom from his office in Copenhagen. Let's go back to the beginning. Tell me how you got into the business.
So basically, I've been working in different roles in the music industry for about 10 years. And in 2014, I think, I was managing a band called Few Wolves, along with a couple of other bands. And we did electronic music. It was released through one of the majors in Denmark. But then I found out that we didn't really have a great success in Denmark, not on radio, not on Spotify. But for some reason, we had quite a lot of radio spins on a radio in Poland, in Warsaw, like a national Polish radio. So for me, this was super, super relevant information because I wanted the band as a manager. I want the band to go wherever there's opportunities. And if this is Poland, fine by me, it's a bigger market and it was not a problem. So I went up to the project manager at Sony as I had invented the wheel or something. I found this super important information in Poland, but to my surprise, the project manager was not really interested in this because he was hired by this major in Denmark to work his local market. So he wasn't really interested in Poland, and also he knew no one from the major in Poland. And he explained to me how, you know, even if he could reach people there, you know, he would have to convince them to prioritize this, you know, for them random Danish act instead of, you know, their local Polish act, as well as the international acts coming from New York and London. So for me, this was the moment where I discovered that I really feel that especially the long tail of the industry, whether that's the managers or the labels or the artists or the songwriters or whoever, there is a really big need for people to have access to their data and actually also be able to own it. And so this was the moment I thought I wanted to make a simple app or something, simple solution that where you could track your radio airplay globally. But then it became a little bit more than not so easy. It was like a little bit more complex over the years.
Well, tell me how Warm got started then. That's the idea, but what happened from there?
Yeah. So basically I found a company that had invented an algorithm that could be used for the purpose. I mean, there were different opportunities, but what I found is that audio fingerprinting and music recognition technology was probably the best way forward. And I'm not, I don't have like a technology background in that sense. So I kind of like had to try my way forward and bluff a little bit. But basically we found a compromise with this company where we could borrow or license their technology in order to build the product. And then I made a business plan and another business plan and a couple of more, and in the end I pitched it to different investors, got feedback, and ended up with this Danish governmental fund who supports, pre-seed startups. I was quite lucky. We got some soft funding at a quite early stage, and then from there it was, you know, sign the contract with the company, make the front end, make the integrations, and get the platform up and running, and then, you know, quickly you found out you have to get more money, so you had to pitch the idea to other investors, right? And here we are like 6 years later.
Well, was the idea always to track radio airplay then worldwide?
Yeah, specifically radio, actually, because what I found is that there's actually quite a big competition in the analytics space in general. You know, you have Chartmetric, and you have song stats, and you have sound charts, and you have Vibrate, and you know, there's quite a lot in this space, and also you know how we have Spotify for artists. All the distributors, they have their own analytics as well. So there's like huge competition in this field, but most of these basically have access to the same data, right? They have access to the same API with Spotify or other services. So it's just a matter of how they display it, how they make their plans and their business model and so on. But for radio, it's very siloed, actually. So in the US, you know, you have Mediabase. In Europe, you have Radio Monitor, who then also covers some monitoring in South Africa, for example, and Australia. And then you have BMAT, who is very much into the Latin American market and south of Europe, of course, and some Scandinavia. But it's very spread all over. So there's not really like one source where you could get the data that you need, as for example as an independent, and also it's super expensive. So at this time, if you wanted to sign up with, for example, Radio Monitor, it costed like €400 or $400 per song, and then you could monitor it forever. But like, who wants to monitor a song forever? You know, maybe you only want to monitor it for 2 months, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's, you know, 12 weeks or whatever. So I was quite confident that there was a huge business opportunity in this space. And then, yeah, of course, we have had these discussions whether we should also go into the analytics space, generally speaking, and add, you know, Spotify and other DSPs. But I feel we are a better space being like in a unique position. It's like promoting ourselves. If you want to have global radio data, you go to Warm, and if you want other services, you will go to other platforms.
Many feel that radio is diminishing somewhat. The radio listener base in the United States, anyway, it seems to be going down, and certainly music on the radio is going down. I'm aware of the United States. I'm not as aware of what's happening in the rest of the world. Is that also occurring elsewhere?
I mean, it's difficult to give one answer, you know, to that, because there will probably be many different opinions, and I'm probably a little bit biased since I work in this space. But from my perspective, first and foremost, we have evidence that supports, or research that supports, that radio in general globally is the biggest format for music consumption. And a lot of people actually discover their music on the radio first, and then they might go to Spotify or other DSPs and add them to the playlist. But predominantly, people discover music on radio. And then I think we see a tendency where a lot of people actually find niche radios, because now, you know, you have MyTune, or you have the TuneSat, and you have different opportunities. Radio Garden, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's basically a website where you see the world in 3D, and you can go zoom into any city and find all the radios in that particular city and listen to it. So you could go to Gibraltar or, you know, Bangladesh or whatever, and just listen to local radio. So in this way, for example, in my case, when I come home, I usually listen to jazz, and I have found this jazz channel in Paris that I like, but it could be anywhere. I mean, for me, it doesn't matter whether it's from France or from Bulgaria or Copenhagen, where I'm from. The point is that I get new music in open for me in this space that I like, which is jazz. And if I wanted to, you know, listen to techno or something else, I could go and find a, you know, a radio station from Ibiza, Sonica or something, or Berlin or something. So I think there are many different options nowadays than, you know, many people see radio as is like, you know, it's like a local thing and you have a local radio. And but now the possibilities are endless if you want to discover new music. And then I also think that we have to also be attentive to that radio is not necessarily the same everywhere. So if you, for example, go to South Africa, people don't necessarily have internet. You know, they don't just have Wi-Fi on cell phones. And it's like, you know, you can have that, but it's quite expensive. So a lot of people could listen to radio, terrestrial radio, for example, then it would be local radio, right? And they don't use streaming the same way as we do maybe in the Nordics. And then you have, you know, there's also a difference, for example, in Scandinavia here where I'm based, young people, they are born with Spotify and smartphones and, you know, social media. And a lot of people maybe get, you know, gets to discover new music on TikTok and so on. Whereas in the States, for example, you know, everyone, if you buy a new car, you have Sirius XM in the car. So the, it's satellite radio, but it's still radio. So in that sense, I think people have a tendency to forget that the way music is consumed from country to country and region to region is very individual. And it's not like, is radio dying or not? I mean, I'm quite sure that radio is not dying. But I think that the format will change over time. We see podcasts coming up. And of course, podcast is going to be included into the flow radio because many radios suddenly have a podcast opportunity where they have the podcast lying, but they will also obviously broadcast them, which makes sense. So I think that it is, you know, not just a yes or no answer if radio is dying. I think it's a lot more complex than that. But I, and all, it's going to be a long answer. But I think also what we see is when there is like algorithms and automated curation and all the great stuff that the DSPs and Spotify or the likes of it brings into the table, we also see people need a counter to that, basically, right? So maybe people suddenly really like to listen to someone take them through a musical journey, or they will suddenly start listening to speak radio or talk radio, for example. So I think it's I don't think radio is going anywhere, but I can definitely see the format changing. And if you also look at the, you know, commercial radios, these are the ones that really have a challenge and a competition with Spotify, for example. But if you really like death metal, I would find a death metal rock radio from Eastern Europe or from Finland or something, right? But if I just want to hear, you know, what is the biggest hit, then I could just as well use Spotify, right?
Okay, I can see you're talking about, you're listening to radio online, and I could see how that would be easy to quantify. But how about when people listen over the air in their car? The data there seems to be difficult on the surface. To me, it seems like it's difficult to obtain. So how does that square?
Well, I mean, I would say 99% of all radios, or at least 95% of all radios that broadcast on an FM base, for example, they also have a website. So they are also broadcasting online, which is the same then. So for us, it becomes easier to actually to do the detections. But whether the listener is using FM or online to access it doesn't really matter if it's the same.
Yeah, I see. Okay, it makes sense. AM radio in the United States, again, used to be very, very big for music and especially music discovery. And now it's really diminished quite a lot. I think here it's used now mostly for talk radio and sports rather than music. Is that the case throughout the rest of the world? Is AM radio even something that people listen to?
I don't know anyone using AM radio in Europe. I don't think it's a thing here. If anything, we use FM, and then the newest thing is DAB, DAB, and now they also have something called DAB Plus. But it doesn't really change anything, because even whether it's DAB or whether it's DAB Plus or FM or whatever, the radio still have a website where their music is being broadcasted online. So for us as a detection service or a monitoring service, it doesn't really change anything. And we also monitor Sirius XM, for example. So we cover basically everything.
Okay, if I were an artist or a manager, for instance, and I want to monitor some songs and I come to you, what would happen? How would I do that?
And so first and foremost, you can sign up and you get awarded with a free trial. And the free trial will currently give you the opportunity to track one song. And then from there, you can register any song you want, whether that's your own songs or someone else's songs. You know, if you're a songwriter, you might not be the artist also. And there could be also interest in monitoring other similar songs. Imagine if you're a rock band and you're doing promotion yourself, you can't afford a plugger, then you can monitor other similar rock bands and see what radios are playing those rock songs, because it's probably rock radios. And at least then you have a directory of radios you can approach. But basically you have two options. You can upload the MP3 file, and then we will create the digital audio fingerprint of that. Or you can select the song. If the song has been released, then we have a connection with some of the DSPs, which means that you can just search for the song and find it in the database and monitor it. So you can either for the radio pluggers and the labels that want to do early promotion in advance of the release date, obviously it makes sense to upload the song directly, so you get all data even since before the release. But if the song is already released, you just select it from the database.
I haven't seen the data that you released, but does it include the time of day that you're getting airplay?
Yep. So we offer the name of the radio, the city, the country, the time, duration, the time, the start time, the end time, the date, the duration down to the second.
For song pluggers, that was a thing that would happen here, where they would charge a client a lot of money, and then the radio station would oblige by playing it in dead time, you know, 3 a.m., and it counts as airplay, but nonetheless, there's not that many people listening to it. So that was some controversy here for a while.
I mean, you know, here you get the full information, so you can see what time they played it, and you can also put, you know, let's say you're a Danish band, but you're played in the States, you can also say that you are in California, so it will give you times based on California time zone, so you don't have to do the calculations. But I mean, with the WARM, you get the full transparency of all the details around the individual radio spins.
What are the biggest radio markets worldwide?
I think that the biggest market is probably US, and then comes UK, and I would assume Germany from there. That's probably the top three. Radio is it's huge in Germany and also in the UK, but especially Germany, it's actually quite big, and the same goes for vinyls and even cassettes and CDs. It's like very, very old school in Germany.
No, we're getting that here too. What we have in the United States, and I'm sure you know this, the radio conglomerates that own, you know, 500 stations. And as a result, there's one programmer for all of those stations. Does that happen in the rest of the world?
I don't think so. And I hope it's not so square as you put it, because one curator for 300 radio channels is a bit of a work. But the point is that the music industry for a long time have been used to only navigating through these monopoly services. So if we, for example, take MediaBase, if I'm not mistaken, right now they are monitoring 700 radios in the US, and we are monitoring 7,000 in the US. So, and of course you can say, yeah, but you know, then what about all these small radios? And is it just, you know, pirate radios and stuff? But that's not, that is not reality. You know, it's like, there is many different radios and also radios that people have a tendency to not really give the full potential. So like a good example is college radio. So imagine if you're an independent artist or a label and you get played on, you know, a college radio in Wisconsin or New York or whatever, you could say, well, there's not so many listeners compared to Capital or compared to Sirius or whatever. But you can also turn around and say, well, there's only 20,000 people listening here or 5,000 or whatever, but they're all the same age group. They all like the same stuff. The demographic information you get here is amazing. You can probably also contact the radio person, you know, and we also saw Beverly Hills 90201 with David Silva sitting in there, you know, instead of spending time in school. And I think this is a very good example of how curators at for example, college radios or you know, other, you know, genre-specific radios or local radios, community radios, where, you know, it's driven by people with passion who probably don't even get paid for it. So why are they there? That is because they want to find new music. They live for music. They want to find and curate new music and not just do as the guy you mentioned before, just, you know, just put Ed Sheeran and Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande on everything. They are actually the ones who want to find, oh, this is like a rock band from Iceland, or this is like a new, you know, jazz track from Paris or something, where this would actually probably be a benefit in terms of getting played and could be seen as, you know, exotic. Whereas the industry, or especially the majors, have had this mindset for a long time that you have to, you know, go through this specific route. You know, you can go to these radios and then you can, you know, go to these and then you can go to AAA and then you can go, but then you need to spend $50,000 on a campaign and then you need a major label to pay that money. And I don't believe that, you know, it's not, I don't feel it's reality for everyone. It is, of course, if you are about to break a huge international artist with a massive budget, of course it makes sense. But for everyone else, this long tail, this indie segment of people who you know, they have to start somewhere, and you cannot just start with the biggest. And it's like it doesn't work like that. So, I mean, I think in many cases, for example, if you put it towards each other and say, well, you can get one airplay on an iHeart channel or on Sirius XM, whatever channel, which could have, you know, 10 million people listening to it. Would you want one spin on that? Or would you want, you know, 100 spins over the course of 3 months on a dedicated niche radio, college radio, community radio, whatever? I would bet you that the second option is a lot better for the artist's career than just to have one spin or two spins randomly happen on a big network channel.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the things, as I was growing up in the business, I knew a lot of people that were in radio and various levels, and they were so passionate about what they did. They loved it. They loved every bit. They couldn't wait to get to work. They didn't care what they were doing as long as they were doing something in radio. They were every bit as passionate as the musicians that I knew. And it's something that continues. One of the, you mentioned college radio, one of the sad parts is a lot of colleges have disbanded their over-the-air radio station, and now it's only digital, which I think is a shame, but it was, you know, cost-cutting. I think that's one of the reasons why college radio has changed somewhat in the United States. I don't think it's as influential as it used to be.
No, I think you're right, but then, you know, usually new opportunities arises, right? And with taking things online, that can take some time, of course, but then the radios also suddenly have a much better opportunity to engage with the users, with the listeners. Then they have, you know, various social medias, and they have a website where they, you know, if they are creative enough, they can have people engage with them there, and they will also have a lot better data sets on where their listeners are from, information that they previously didn't have when they just broadcasted on air, and then someone called in and, you know, okay, it was Joe from somewhere in his car, but with when taking everything online, you will suddenly start, you know, being able to engage with the listeners, but that's a mindset, and that takes time, and that and maybe it's not going to work out in the US, but then, and maybe it will work out in Europe or vice versa. But I just don't think that, you know, things are the same, or I know that things are not the same everywhere. And what can seem small for some can be significant for others.
You're actually making me feel good talking to you, because what we read about radio here is that it, and what I know from listening, I'm in Los Angeles, so I've a lot to listen to, but nonetheless, you find that there's this homogenization, especially if you drive across the country. It used to be every 100 miles there'd be a different radio station and they'd be broadcasting something different, and now you could drive across the United States and take you 3 days and you would basically be listening to the same program, you know, everywhere. But talking to you, knowing that it's different in other parts of the world, actually makes me feel good. So thank you for that.
That's good to hear. But I think that this is also a very good point, because if you are a label or an artist, for example, in New York or in LA or whatever, you would probably be, you know, born with the mindset that Europe doesn't matter. Hmm. It's like, that's like, it could be Korea, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, maybe you're never going to go there even. And you don't know if France is a country or a city in Belgium. And I experience this all the time. And I think this is fair, because I don't know where Wisconsin is either. And I don't know if it was, you know, or, you know, so it makes so much sense, but it's also a bit of a problem if we all only look in our small garden, you know, and say it doesn't matter what happens over there, because I know that I have to only focus on this. But we see, for example, artists from Denmark who is suddenly becomes quite big in, for example, Philippines. And that is, of course, because they suddenly, there's something that triggers. I mean, maybe there is, you know, this is like a blonde guy who, you know, have blue eyes and thing sings beautifully or whatever. And this matches just what, you know, a young clientele wants in from the Philippines. And then on top of that, you know, you have all these algorithms, whether it's on TikTok or on Spotify, whatever, where the labels can almost manipulate, you know, an organic growth in a certain market or a certain region. But this is, you know, just how, you know, marketing, music marketing works nowadays. But these guys, for example, with these examples, they go on tour in Philippines, and I would bet you they would never have thought about that. And also, maybe they're not going to make, you know, $50,000 per gig. Maybe they only make $5,000 per gig, but then maybe they can make 10 gigs. And in the end, it's a huge success to be able to go to the Philippines and get paid to play your music. But if they didn't have access to the data, whether it's from radio or whether it's from streaming or other sources, you know, they will never know this. And a great, great example, of course, with this is Rodriguez, if you know the story with Searching for Sugar Man.
Yeah.
This is like, I use this all the time, because this is like a perfect example. And of course, this is a long time ago, so things were different. But this is exactly why you should look at how to get global data. And I know, you know, a lot of major labels probably, they would probably say, well, you know, if you haven't promoted your music, you know, it's not going to get played on radio. And if you look at 700 radios in media base in the US, and you tell yourself that, and you don't have access to other data, that is, of course, the truth, right? But if you suddenly can monitor 7,000 radios in the US, and you can track if your music is being played in Mexico or Peru or Spain or Cambodia, you know, you suddenly have a lot better opportunity to actually get data, and suddenly you see something that you didn't expect, because with the help of streaming, music is distributed instantly globally. I mean, you and me could record a song today and release it tomorrow, and a guy in Korea could play it the day after tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And that is just how the industry works. So looking at your data from a silo perspective, only looking in your front garden, it doesn't make sense when we are in a globalized world.
Yeah, you're right. How much does it cost to monitor a song, for instance?
So right now we are pricing it per song, and then we have some small bundle packages, but you know, you can monitor a song for around $3 to $5 per month.
Oh.
And of course, if you have a 100 song catalog, yeah, that can be expensive. But maybe you don't have to monitor, you know, 100 song catalog. If you have 5 new releases, just the way if you release an album with 10 songs, you might have 1 or 2 singles. So maybe you should start monitoring the 2 singles, you know, or you could monitor the whole album and see, okay, it's only number 3 that gets played. So then I will stop monitoring the other ones. I mean, I'm not advocating that people should spend all their money on monitoring, you know, all the catalog. Definitely not. I think what they should be monitoring is what they feel is relevant. And if they have released 10 songs on Spotify, but only 5 of them have more than, 1,000 streams, then you should monitor those 5, I would say.
It's very reasonable. I don't know why you wouldn't do it at that price.
I agree. But that's why we're here, right? I mean, I know we're kind of like taking also a bit of a role here in the industry to try and both advocate but also educate that, you know, you actually have the opportunity to see if your song is played in Thailand, and you're releasing your music digitally globally. So why wouldn't you want to track that?
Yeah.
But usually people need to try it out and maybe, you know, discover something they didn't expect before it is, you know, something that really makes sense to them, right?
Yeah.
And especially if you are an artist and you have a label, and you know that you contact a label, what about radio? Yeah, we're already using, you know, a system. Oh, okay, then I don't need to do it.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of artists, and especially the managers, should question whether the data that they are receiving, if for example from a major label, which is usually very, very siloed. Like if I'm signed to, as back to the story I began with, but if I was signed to Sony in Sweden, then I would only get data from Sweden, maybe from Scandinavia or maybe from Germany, but I would not know or never get any information if the song was played in Iceland or in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Which for me is, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, everything else is global, and why wouldn't you treat radio data the same way?
Well, good opportunity for you.
Yeah.
Last question, Jasper. What's the best piece of business advice, or any kind of advice, that maybe somebody imparted to you or you learned along the way?
Oh, there's a lot. But I mean, I would not trust everything that people say just because you've heard it a lot of times. It doesn't become more true just because it's been replicated a lot of times. And that's something that I think we see a lot in the music industry, you know, from time to time, whether it's, you know, about this is the way we do it, this is the way we promote music, this is the way we do it, or whether it's a new buzzword, you know. I remember when blockchain came, you know, and had its impact, you know, in 18 or around that, you know, any conferences you went to, it was blockchain, 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 blockchain. All companies would solve anything with blockchain, and they threw money at you just if you mentioned the name blockchain. And for some people, the discussions was like, but it's a way to store things. It's not gonna solve anything if you don't have the deals that comes with this, because the real problem in the music industry, or one of them, is not about how to store data. It's about to share data.
Yeah.
You know, the labels or the distributors, or you know, the DSPs or the publishers or whatever, there is not one database where you can go and say everything, we can trust everything from this source. So if you have five blockchain companies who, you know, who are all, you know, music tech or not necessarily owning any catalog, but they all want to solve the same problems, but they also don't want to share data, then it becomes, you know, a weird conversation. And now, of course, we see the same with AI, and, you know, not long ago it was NFTs. And I sometimes just wish that people just, you know, could breathe a little bit and just don't believe the hype, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, question things, and just because it's being said a lot of times, that doesn't make it true, you know.
You can find out more about Jesper and Warm Music at warmmusic.net. That's Warm Music, WARMMUSIC, all one word, .net. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music news, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or you can find it in Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Mixcloud, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Radio Public, and Podbean. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.